Blog Talk Radio.
Wednesday, and that means it's another Orange Report, and unfortunately it is another weekly loss, but I'm going to stay positive this week because after reviewing the game three more times, once on DVR and a couple online where I've really got where I like watching the games online, Matt, because I can slow it down and really watch blocking and things, and I'm seeing a lot of positives. Yes, there's some still negatives, and obviously the biggest, we're not winning the games. We're not closing out games. It's amazing how young this team is and how close we feel in 1 second, and then the next second we still feel so far away. But the amazing thing, we're about four or five plays away from being 3-1 instead of 1-3. The Cal game was right there for the taking. This game was basically all we had to do was pick up a first down or two, get a stop or two, and we're right there. We'll talk about the officiating a little bit. Obviously it was horrible. There's no way to sugarcoat that. So we're going to definitely recap the Oklahoma State game tonight, and then we're obviously going to jump right into the TCU game, which joining us here in about 4 or 5 minutes will be Marshall Weber from the Frogs of War site, and we'll talk a little TCU, and I'm sure he's breathing a little better today. If anybody saw the TCU game, they basically got a miracle tip ball to win their game, or they would have been an upset victim. So I think that's what we're going to see every week in the Big 12. But with that said, how's it going tonight, Matt, up in Fort Worth?
It's going well. Looking forward to a quote-unquote home game for the Saturday. It's a nice 3.5 mile drive to the stadium, so that's a lot better than 3 hours to Austin. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I still think we'll have a good crowd there. 11 o'clock games, nobody likes them, but in this instant, TCU coming off a big emotional win, we're coming off obviously a big emotional loss. I think our kids will be ready to play. Maybe TCU will come out sleepwalking a little bit, and we might be able to jump out to a lead and see what happens. Like I was saying in the opening, I see a lot of positive signs. Hurd again didn't have a great game, but he had a pretty solid game. He missed some throws. He took a couple sacks, that he didn't get rid of the ball in time. Some of that was his fault. Some of that is the way Oklahoma State decided to attack him. And I saw some interesting things. And now that he's been on film, a couple games, I think that's what we're gonna see. But Oklahoma State did some pretty interesting things on defense. I started picking it up when I rewatched the game. A lot of times what they did is they looped their defensive ends back in towards the center on pass plays many times to keep him from splitting up the middle. And then the tackles basically didn't rush up the field. They slanted to the outside and then basically had a linebacker step up to the outside and then one spying in the middle. Teams have made an adjustment on his running ability. It's time now for our coaches to scheme around that because that's probably what we're going to see a big dose of. But, we handled it pretty well. By them doing that, we found some soft spots there in the middle, and we were gutting them pretty good right up the middle there for a while. And then obviously once Perkins went down, the offense just went zero. The day was basically over at that point. And then you throw in the officiating that, as we know, was subpar, putting it nicely, not wanting to use four-letter words here. Some very questionable calls. And we're going to get into the officiating. I don't want to harp on it, a lot. We'll get on it in our second segment after Marshall comes on. And we talked TCU. I mean, it's been beat to death. The message boards have just about beat it to death. There's not much else to say. You're hoping at some point the officiating will at least even out. But I guess the thing before Marshall gets on here, I am going to say on it is, you know, I've seen some pretty good write-ups on it, some pretty good statistical analyses on it, and, you know, it just doesn't pass the sniff test. Now, I don't think the refs sat in a room and said, hey, let's screw Texas today, let's do this. I don't think it was a concerted effort on the whole group, but there's at least one, possibly two on that crew for whatever reason are quick to throw flags on some things that could be thrown on a lot of people. So, you know, I don't want to make accusations that it was flat out cheating. I mean, but it was a poorly officiated game. Now, with that said, if we make a few more plays, we don't drop the punt, we probably go to overtime. I like our chances in overtime. You know, the fumble at the end where they said it wasn't clear who recovered it, we recover that. There, instead of, you know, us starting at the 5, we start at the 50. That changes the field. So, you know, when I've rewatched the game 3 times, other than dropping the punt, which was, you know, the ultimate nail in the coffin, as they say, there wasn't much else we could have done to win the game in that last 5 minutes. There was 3 or 4 critical calls that just did not go our way. And one of them was a close call. The other two were just completely atrocious. So we'll talk about those more probably about 20 minutes or so when we get through with Marshall. So with that said, Marshall's on the line. I don't want to keep him holding. Marshall, welcome to the Orange Report with Mike and Matt tonight. How's everything going tonight, sir?
Good. Pleasure to be here again.
Well, good. We're glad to have you. And you didn't catch my opening, but I was saying that you know, y'all's game and our game, I think, is going to be pretty indicative of what the Big 12 is going to look like this year. I don't think, you know, because of y'all's injuries, I still think Baylor is going to be tested. I just don't, you know, every week is going to be a dogfight. It's going to come down to who makes a play or two in the last few minutes. Obviously, like in y'all's game with Tech drove down the field, boom, y'all came right back, and, you know, a lucky tip ball, sometimes you got to have a little luck, and then in our case, we gave Oklahoma State some luck, and we had bad luck. I think we're going to see a lot of games that way this year. What are your thoughts on the Big 12 as a whole before we get on TCU?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's hard to disagree with. You know, even in the, you know, as the country as a whole, I don't think anybody's been overly impressive. And the Big 12 definitely seems a little more even than probably most have thought, not just top-heavy with Baylor and TCU going into the season. I haven't got a whole lot of chance to. I mean, I've watched Oklahoma play against Tennessee. I've watched just about every Texas game, just because they're always on an easy channel to find. But I haven't been overly impressed with Oklahoma State. I mean, they have a good defense, probably a better defense than I've given them credit for. West Virginia, you know, is obviously a sleeper now, kind of not the underdog, but kind of one that nobody was expecting going in, and now that you know, now there's some people's favorite to win. So it's definitely a lot more even. I think the Big 12, by season's end, I think will, you know, build up a lot more goodwill, not only with the playoff committee, but I think just fans in general. There's really just 5 or 6 good teams. I mean, Texas is on the up. I mean, I know they've had two heartbreakers in a row, but, you know, they're getting better every week. Tech is really great. I think Tech is going to push Baylor more than people think this weekend. And I don't know. It's a really good time to be a fan of the Big 12. Kansas State's always fun to watch. And unless you're Iowa State and Kansas, I mean, this is definitely going to be a really, really fun year.
Well, looking at TCU this year, and I've seen a couple of y'all's games as well. And, I mean, other than the injuries on defense, you know, I think we talked about it in the preseason that, you know, you were replacing a lot of people on defense. And then, obviously, you know, injuries kicked in. What are you seeing difference in this team versus last year? Good, positive, and negative, as they say. What's the difference between this team and last year's?
I guess we'll start with the negative. You know, at the beginning of the season, you know, that I was actually really impressed with the defense in the first Minnesota game. And I was kind of underwhelmed with the offense. The defensive line did really great in that first game. The young linebackers did really well. And, you know, the corners and the secondary did fine, too. But, and then, you know, a couple weeks in, you lose a big safety in Kenny Iokah. And that really hurts, and then you lose probably your, you know, easily your best corner. Some would say the best player on defense in Renthony Tejada. You know, really great cornerback, stepped in as a freshman last year. You know, really got only better as the season went on. I mean, as, you know, freshmen tend to do. But Yeah, the negative has definitely been probably the lack of turnovers on defense. You know, going in after the Minnesota game and after the Stephen F. Austin game, I think we were up to 28 straight games with a turnover, and that streak got ended at SMU, and then we didn't have a turnover against Tech. We arguably should have, and you know, I meant to put this into something I wrote today, and you know, hopefully I'll talk about it more next week. But yeah, I think the lack of turnovers have definitely been a big part, because I mean, you know, the defense was, you know, a lot better, a lot healthier last year, but I mean, they got, you know, at least one turnover a game, sometimes two, sometimes three. And when you have an offense that can respond so well to that turnover, like they did actually in the Minnesota game, that's, you know, that was seen in that first game, I think, on our second touchdown, possibly our first in that game. It feels like a year ago already. But, you know, with our offense being able to respond so well last year to defensive turnovers, that's what really, you know, helped our season last year and really kind of just help us, you know, aside from the Kansas game and the West Virginia game, just really kind of just plow through teams. And that's probably been the, you know, despite all the injuries, not having that turnover. And if you look back at the Tech game, when maybe we should have gotten that turnover on that fumble that Mahomes had, that, you know, assuming they, you know, TCU, the way they've been scoring that game, you know, you could pretty much say that they probably would have scored on that drive and, you know, maybe would have put the game semi out of reach, and it definitely would have been as back and forth as it was. So I'd definitely say turnovers, the lack of turnovers that the defense has created, you know, and, it, you know, not having a healthy team definitely adds to that. But I'd say that. Positive, I think, like I said, in the Minnesota game, I wasn't impressed with the offense, but it's only gotten better since. Trevon Boykin is top 10 on just about every passing category. He's number two in the nation in touchdowns, and I guess third now in passing yards. The NCAA, like, site's a little slow, like, updating. The guy from, like, Bowling Green is number one, and I forget who's number two, but he's much more efficient than he was last year. TCU's running less of a hurry-up than they did last year, you know, for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, the last two games he played, SMU, Texas Tech, they run fast offenses. So when you have a lot of scoring, teams that can score fast on both sides, you kind of want to slow the game down a little bit more. But Boykin's just more efficient. He's smarter. He's, you know, with his offensive line, they're so comfortable with each other. He's calling off plays. He's changing plays. Running a lot more in routes with, and that has a lot to do with Colby Listenby not being at 100% the last two games. He didn't play in last week's game. He went out early in the SMU game. So we're not throwing as many, like, Hail Marys or kill shots, whatever you want to call them. We're still using Doxon a lot on deep throws, but we're also just running a lot more in routes with our slot receivers, kind of just using that as our run up the middle. And then, again, the running game has been brilliant the last two games too. Aaron Green has had 160 yards, at least 160 yards the last two games. So, I mean, the offense is only getting better. You know, I think we're still at the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we've seen in their playbook. But it's really exciting. You know, we had a big Ty Slimina go down, slot receiver, fan favorite. I mean, one of our best receivers, super athletic. And then we had a freshman step in named Garrison Stewart. You know, probably had no idea he was going to play not only this game, maybe for the rest of the season. And steps right into that tough environment in Lubbock, you know, where, you know, Boykin, even Mahomes had to calm down the crowd because they couldn't hear the plays. And that kid just stepped right in, caught, I forgot how many passes, but he got 88 yards. And, you know, that just kind of just shows you the depth TCU at least has on offense. And it's just such a you know, the unit is just so on the same page. And those guys have, I mean, it just shows how, like, mature they are. Not only from last year, they kind of just surprised everyone, but they've kind of, you know, they may have not, highlight-wise, maybe, like, pass the eye test. A lot of my friends even will watch the game and be like, oh, I don't like our offense here. It's like, well, you know, they scored 55, and, you know, they scored just about on every drive in Lubbock. And I like the offense a lot better this year. I think it's a little more – it's not taking as many chances. There's a little less trickery. And like I said, but that has led to Boykin being more efficient. He's well over 60. Like I said, I think when I called you last time, I wanted Boykin's percentage, completion percentage to be higher, and it has been. And it's definitely shown. So, I don't know. Like, that, you know, for the fact that the offense the offense has been able to improve on what it did last year is really encouraging.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, when the season opened up, you know, Swoops was a starter, and I knew that sure. was going to be very short-lived. And now, obviously, that, you know, you and me and the rest of the country have seen a few games of her, redshirt freshman, the only three starts into his career. You know, what do you think defensive-wise TCU is going to do now that they would have been different, obviously, having Hurd in there, who on any given play can bust a 75-yarder?
Sure. Tell the truth, I mean, I think it's sort of anyone's guess. You know, Patterson talked, I think it was yesterday at a press conference. It wasn't today's. But they're going to have to do something different. You know, they played, Matt Davis at SMU is mobile, kind of more like Hurd as opposed to someone like Mahomes, who's kind of more of a power runner. So I don't know. Gary has something special up his sleeve. But as a whole, I think, Hurd doesn't throw the ball a lot. He threw the ball a lot in the Cal game, but he didn't throw a lot in the Oklahoma State game or the Rice game. I mean, he gets, you know, it's kind of a weird thing to say because, you know, his yards, I think, per completion is about like eight, or he's, I'm trying to think what the exact stat was. But anyway, he's thrown about 18 games on average, not including the Notre Dame game because he only threw one pass. But since the Rice game, he throws about 18 times. I think he's thrown 56 times this season, and Boykin threw 54 against Tech. So we just have to be smart about kind of limiting when he throws and how effective that throw is. As good as he is on his feet, and he's so good on his feet, and he's such a fun player to watch, he's definitely been able to create some pretty deep plays. That being said, I think his arm strength probably needs to improve a bit. I mean, like I said, he's a talented kid, much better than Swoops. But if we can kind of just eliminate his kind of improvised runs and improvised kind of passing plays and finding somebody deep and kind of shutting that down and basically preventing him, like you said, from breaking a 75-yarder or, you know, throwing a 40-yard pass that becomes, you know, or, yeah, you know, throws it 20 yards and it becomes a 40, 50-yard pass. And Texas gets a big, big gain off of that. So I don't know. I mean, like I said, my guess is as good as anybody's. I think Patterson has something a little special up his sleeve. Texas, TCU got some pretty good news, this evening, this afternoon, whatever you want to call it. Mike Tuua will be back. I don't know if he'll play in the Texas game. Devion Pearson's back. He was back last week. And Terrell Lathan, kind of giving us mixed feelings. He, on Twitter, he kind of made it seem like he's going to be back this weekend, but I think Patterson still at least told the media that he'd be at least 2 weeks. So TCU's getting healthier, I'd like to see Tuua back and Lathan back, but, you know, I think the worst you've seen of TCU's defense is kind of over, and that was against Tech. But like I said, Hurd is as hard as anyone as we'll face this year. I mean, he's a young kid, and I think that's where they're going to probably most benefit. And like I was talking about earlier, the turnovers, and if we can just find a way to make a young quarterback like that make a mistake, that'll kind of negate, you know, the big plays he is capable of making. And by all means, he will make a couple of big plays on Saturday. It's a matter of how much he can do it. And I just don't know if he can necessarily keep up with Boykin. Not because he's not, you know, a good quarterback. It's just, you know, Boykin, this is second year-ish. You know, he's been the quarterback for 3 years. He kind of was a receiver for a year. But, you know, I mean, it's just an experience thing right now. But, you know, credit Hurd and, you know, credit, you know, the offensive coordinators at Texas. I mean, I think they found their guy, and he's definitely going to be a force for the next couple of years for the Big 12.
Yeah, on defense of the guys that you listed that are out and everything, which one is probably the one y'all missed the most, in your opinion?
Well, that's a good question. I think our defensive line is really good. And even with, you know, Tuua and that whole kind of, you know, BS with the, you know, the fight with the frat kids and, you know, stealing the beer. He'll be great to have back. Lathan made a lot of big plays in the first couple games before he got hurt. I mean, that guy is fast. I mean, he rushes the passer. And that would be someone good to have back for a game like Texas when you have someone a little more mobile. Not more mobile, just very mobile like Hurd. But I think regardless of whether Lathan and Tuua play this weekend, I don't think, you know, regardless of whether of how like strong our defensive line is and how deep it is on Saturday, I think we can beat you know, I think we could beat Texas, but I think by far the biggest loss has definitely been in the secondary. And it starts with Kenny Iaukea going down and freeing up that weak safety spot. And that weak safety has just been brutal for us. We have a kid that's getting better. I mean, he's a walk-on named Michael Downing. You know, I mean, bless him for trying, but he just wasn't very effective at first. And, you know, he's a little better in the Tech game. Wasn't terrible, but, you know, he's nowhere close to where Kenny Iaukea was. But by far, I think the biggest has been Ranthony Tejada. I mean, when you have a cornerback like that that, you know, was freshman all Big 12 and, you know, could have been all Big 12 this year, you take away a corner and, you know, that means you basically have more options with your receivers and what you can do with your offensive game plan. Because, you know, Tejada's covering your best receiver. You start throwing to the other guy and, you know, you can predict that they're going to have to go to the other side of the field more. And now with these young corners, it's just like you don't know, and it kind of frees up the offensive playbook for Texas, or no matter who you play. So, yeah, I'd probably say Ranthony Tejada, the cornerback.
Really, kind of shifting gears here, talking, you know, TCU as a whole. You know, obviously, y'all's schedule gets real interesting later in the season. You know, when you go at
sure.
Oklahoma State, then you basically have a bye week, November 14th with Kansas, then you go at Oklahoma, Baylor. I know earlier in the
right.
year, you know, we talked about that you kind of thought there was potential trap games, you know, with the injuries and other things, and now that you've actually seen y'all play, how do you think TCU is going to end the, you know, finish up the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we get we get through Texas, and I think we can. Again, I think I'm just glad we're playing Texas now as opposed to where we would have last year. Like, say we had, you know, last year's schedule this year and we were playing Texas on Thanksgiving, I'd be a lot more worried. But, you know, I think Texas is due for a win, and they're going to, I think, catch a lot of steam later in the season and just really put things together, look nice. But I think we get past this weekend. And then, yeah, like you said, we go to Kansas State. We should be able to get past them. You know, I mean, they're not, you know, they're always, you always got to worry about Kansas State. But, you know, I think we'll be fine this year. And then we have a break. And then we have Iowa State, like you said. But then West Virginia is probably the game I'm circling right now. I want to see us play this weekend and then probably next weekend. We should be healthier on defense by then, which is good. I mean, West Virginia is a home game, but it's on a Thursday. And like me, uh-huh. you know, I have season tickets, but who knows if I can go to a Thursday night game in Fort Worth. And, you know, you have to take off basically a Thursday for a 6:30 game. And then you have to take off a, you know, likely a Friday too, at least half of a day. So I think that kind of, you know, takes a lot of our home crowd out of the picture. We play really well at home, but, you know, if you have a big game on a Thursday and, you know, your out-of-towners can't come, that kind of creates a problem. But I'm still most worried. I mean, like I said, I want to see West Virginia play more. I want to see them. Maryland's not a very good team. I want to see them play on offense. I think they have a really, really good defense that'll probably only continue to get better. Like, this weekend's a big barometer for the season, and this is a good kind of pivot. Is, you know, they play Oklahoma, and I'm probably most worried about Oklahoma just because, as much as I hate to say it, Baker Mayfield's done really well this year, and that kind of quarterback with that kind of defense with Sterling Shepard, with P. Ryan, I mean, they're just kind of looking like a complete team. And in that game being in Norman, you know, in November, is going to be a tough game. I still like us against Baylor at home. And kind of what I really see happening right now is us losing in Norman, Baylor beating Oklahoma, and then us beating Baylor. So that creates like a three-way tie. Maybe we have, you know, maybe we do lose to West Virginia, but, you know, I could definitely see a three-way tie between Baylor, Oklahoma, and TCU.
Uh-huh.
And is Notre Dame is kind of pulling out wins. You know, I mean, they've responded sort of like us. I mean, they've responded really well with injury. You know, Utah's looking good. You have to assume that the winner of Michigan State, Ohio State will make the playoff, because I think whoever wins that game will probably end up going undefeated as well. And then you're obviously going to have an SEC team in there, and there's your four spots. And, you know, that could be really bad for the Big 12. And, you know, I think maybe in the bowl games, the truth will show of how good this conference actually is. And maybe, who knows, maybe the committee will throw us a curveball and maybe leave a Pac-12 team out, because I don't really see a Pac-12 team. As good as Utah's looked, I don't necessarily see a Pac-12 team going undefeated. I mean, UCLA's looked beatable. So, you know, it's tough to say. I think if Notre Dame goes undefeated, I mean, they're obviously going to get a, you know, even a one-loss Notre Dame team is good for the playoff just because, A, people are going to watch it, and, you know, B, it's going to make them a lot of money. So, you know, the Big 12 is in a kind of a tough position. I mean, it's a really fun conference to, you know, watch, and I love the round robin. But, you know, if you have, you know, you thought there was drama last year with two, you know, one-loss teams, you know, they were fairly even. Now imagine like a three-way tie. So, you know, it's anyone's guess. I mean, this is only the fifth week of the season. You know, we could tank. Oklahoma, you know, has a tendency to, I don't think we'll tank, by the way, but I think, you know, like I said, I think we get better once our defense kind of reloads, you know, as it's starting to, especially with the defensive line. And Patterson's going to coach these kids up, and I do think that the worst of our defense is behind us. But, you know, Oklahoma has a tendency to tank. If they lose a game against West Virginia, you know, all those dominoes could fall. I mean, you see that all the time at Oklahoma. Either they're going to go undefeated or, you know, they're going to go, you know, 7-5 or whatever. And then Baylor, I mean, who knows? You know, like I said, I want to see them play Tech. So as you get more to conference, you get more of a barometer, and you get kind of – you're able to gauge these teams better. But I still think it's a big race between Oklahoma, TCU, Baylor, and West Virginia at the moment. And with our biggest – The biggest game that's concerning me is definitely going up to Norman at this moment in time. But, you know, my answer could very much change next Monday.
Yeah, I don't mean this in a bad way against TCU, Baylor, or anybody. I honestly could really care less if the Big 12 goes to the playoffs or not. I am not a conference rah-rah guy. I mean, it just really – it doesn't make me feel, I mean, I'm so indifferent to it. I know a lot of people have gotten in the, you know, it is what it is. I can't even put it into words. It really doesn't matter. If somebody from our conference gets in, great. If they don't, it just really doesn't bother me, because I'm convinced now, the Big 12 is imploding as soon as it can. I'm telling you, people are going to be surprised, but this thing with the officiating has finally pissed off the right people in Austin, and I'm going to talk about it later in the show. But the wheels of motion have the wheels are in motion in Austin to find us a place, which is a whole different conversation. So. I'm going to predict Texas is not going to be in the Big 12 much longer. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Me and my buddies talk, you know, pretty much every summer when there's really nothing else to talk about. And, like, we kind of always predict the Big 12 is going to just disintegrate. And, you know, TCU and Tech and Texas maybe will go out west. And maybe
we're not going west.
Some of these other teams.
We're not going west.
You think you'll go independent?
I don't know. I have no prediction of where it's going to go. I think there's going to be major. There's going to be a 65 or 75 team major TV money deal that's not going to be conference driven. I think in about 6 or 7 years. So honestly, I don't think we're going to really have conferences. If we do, we're going to have regional pods. It ain't going to be called the SEC. It's going to be the Southwest region. But I think we're going to end up in somewhere in the South with somebody. I don't know how it's all going to shake up. But
I like that. I think you hit the nail on the head. If you go back and even watch the TCU and Tech game, I mean there are some terrible calls. Probably more on us than there were Tech. But I mean Tech's got some really bad ones too. And we've gotten bad calls over the years, and like you said, it finally happened, pissed off the wrong people. And, you know, obviously, you know, regardless of whether or not Texas has won a Big 12 championship, when the last time it was, I mean, I know when it was, but, you know what I mean? You know, if you piss off people in Austin, you piss off where the money's coming from, and you definitely shake things up. And, you know, luckily we have a really great athletic director that at the Big 12 were inevitably, when it does go, maybe – you know, I'm with you. I think it will eventually disintegrate, but you know, I think Chris Del Conte will have us in a place where we want to be post Big 12. So we're not really sweating it.
I think OU's looking too right now. I know some pretty big OU people, and they're looking as well. So it's not just Texas. It's OU has got their wheels in motion. But before I get too far into this. Go ahead and give me your score prediction for the game.
God, what did I say? I forgot what I said in my preview, but I gave us 14, I think. I think I said 52-38. I think it's a little close at first. TCU pulls away, and then Hurd starts to kind of get things moving a little bit in the third. And then we kind of make a big stop, and TCU pulls away kind of at the end and kind of gets, you know, a garbage time touchdown in the fourth and, you know, becomes 38-14. But I think Texas pulls in pretty close. I think it becomes, you know, something like 45-35 at one point. They definitely make it interesting. Hurd makes a big play, but I actually think our defense will step up, make that turnover they need to, offense quick response, and we're able to kind of get through Texas, a good improved Texas team at home in Fort Worth.
Yeah, I haven't decided on mine. I've kind of gone back and forth on my numbers, but my numbers where I'm kind of hovering around are probably within 4 or 5 points of yours either way as well. So, well, Marshall, man, we appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on. I don't think I'm actually going to be able to make it to Fort Worth. I've had something scheduled on this Saturday for several months. It looks like it is going to happen. I was hoping at the last minute it would get canceled, so I'm going to miss it. But my buddy Matt on the line, he lives in Fort Worth, so he'll be there bright and early. I'm sure you're going up to the game as well, so you have fun.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Like I said, after we play this weekend, I'll definitely be excited to watch Texas and kind of Hurd and, you know, this team grow. They're, like I said, I think you got the right guy in Austin and you got all the moving parts. You know, all the Strong's recruits are looking really good, so I'm excited to see Texas grow. I'm excited for you guys.
Yeah, I'm not excited about it as you are. I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to see how it all plays out. But tell our listeners if they want to talk to you on Twitter or go over to y'all's site where they can find you.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to read more about the game, we did a good Q&A with Barking Carnival today, one of the Texas SB Nation sites. We'll have our version of it out tomorrow, but it's just Frogs of War on Twitter, Frogs and then apostrophe War. And then you can find me just by searching Twitter, just Marshall Weber on Twitter. My handle is MarshMouth5. Something I've had, like I said, I explain this every time, something I've had like since an Xbox name in like high school. But, just search Marshall Weber on Twitter. You'll obviously see the TCU stuff in the bio, so that'll be me. Follow Frogs of War. Follow your Texas SB Nation sites to do a really, really great job, too. So find us on there, and I look forward to the game Saturday.
All right, man. Appreciate you coming on. Have a good evening.
All right. Thanks, Mike. You too.
Thank you, sir. All right. All right, Matt. I was going to let you jump in there, but it just kind of got away. So I'm going to let you just have a few minutes of your own if you wanted to dissect anything Marshall said.
Well, you know, I think he kind of took some of the questions I was going to ask, so I wouldn't have been able to jump in anyway because I was going to ask about the players coming back. That was really my main question. I saw that come across Twitter. To me, you know, when I was looking at the stats from the Tech game, I'll be honest, you know, watching it live, it just looked like a ping pong match, so I really wasn't paying very close attention to the details.
Uh-huh.
It looked like, you know, Tech was able to run the ball pretty effectively in that game, and I thought that was a good sign for Texas. If they're getting some of that beef back on the defensive line, that could be a problem. I think, you know, what I just remember of TCU last year, and obviously it's a totally different defense now as far as what players are on the field, but what Patterson did to Swoops, you know, their defensive line just mauled our offensive line all night long, and so they were getting pressure with four, and they had seven guys back in coverage, and you're screwed if they can do that. If you can't run against their four and they can drop everybody back and still get pressure, it's going to be a long day. And so, to me, that's the big key on Saturday. And Marshall also brought up turnovers. You know, to me, that's a huge thing. And, you know, obviously it's a sign for optimism if TCU's not really forcing a lot of turnovers. That's one thing I'll say about the Texas defense. You know, they're young. And uh-huh. Usually what we see is, you know, they don't force turnovers because they're just trying to stop the other team. And it's not until you really get good that you can ace that test, and now you move on to trying to force turnovers and make big plays. Our defense has been making big plays despite giving up, you know, yards galore. The thing that worries me is that stuff usually tends to even out a little bit and we're 1-3 with a +6 turnover margin. TCU hasn't forced a lot of turnovers. You know, that makes me a little bit nervous if things are due to even out a little bit. We absolutely cannot afford to lose the turnover battle. Like he said, with that offense TCU has, if you turn the ball over 3 or 4 times, I mean, you could have the best defense in the world and you're still going to give up 35 points to those guys. So I think he was on, you know, he nailed it pretty much about, you know, most of the stuff I was concerned about with TCU, and I thought, you know, gave a little more insight to what we're going to see on Saturday.
Yeah, my score prediction is probably not, like I said, too much off from his. I don't have TCU scoring 52 points. I mean, I may be wrong there, but I think our defense is getting better, and I think the coaches are finally starting to recognize some combinations that give us a lot more athletic ability on the field. And obviously, I think the reason the defense is getting better is you know, it always starts up front. I think Hassan Ridgeway is finally starting to look healthy, and he's finally starting to get in shape. Like I said, a couple times I went back and watched the game and slowed it down a little bit. He was in complete beast mode up front. I mean, he became in that second half where he was almost – Oklahoma State could not do anything with him. They doubled him, triple-teamed him, and they must have just – made something to piss him off because he was in pure beast mode. I mean, he was unblockable. I mean, he lived in the backfield. He was crushing, running plays. I mean, he just was pretty disruptive. So I'm hoping that high level of play can continue, because what it does now, it starts to take pressure off the linebackers. They're running free. The defensive backs are not having to worry about linemen and people coming out on them on sweeps. So, you know, that's a positive. That's a positive sign. But I do want to go back real quick before we move on. I want to give these numbers that I found very, very interesting on snaps. On defensive end, Shiro Davis played about 46 snaps. Bryce Cottrell played about 29 snaps, and then redshirt freshman Derek Roberson played about 3 snaps. So he's still in a reserve role. Nashawn Hughes, the sophomore, he played 61 snaps. And then Charles Amahu, the true freshman, played 17 snaps. So if you're tracking the numbers, Cottrell is starting to get more snaps, and then obviously Charles is starting to get more snaps. So I would be surprised this week, if we look at these numbers again next week, that Amahu is up into about the 25 or 30 snaps range. So you're starting to see, you know, more true freshmen get more and more time. Now, Will linebacker, Peter Jenkins is still getting the vast majority at around 73 snaps, but and then you have Anthony Wheeler, who also got 26 snaps, another true freshman. And then obviously Malik Jefferson got 71 snaps. So Malik's playing just about every down, and they're moving him around a little bit. So this is interesting. At cornerback, this is where the numbers really start to shake out. Duke Thomas is getting 76 snaps, but he's getting about 57 at nickel, 15 at corner, and 4 at right corner. Holton Hill got 54 snaps, so he was in the game a lot, true freshman. Kyrus Boyd at 41 snaps. Devontae Davis at about 30 snaps, give or take a little bit, another true freshman. And then John Bonney, about 13 snaps. Dylan, and then you're starting to see a lot less. And then Jason Hall had 78 snaps. I think the players you can look for this week at safety to start to get more looks is P.J. Locke. And then you're going to start seeing some other combinations at safety. So it's going to be interesting to watch those progress as the youth movement continues. And on offense, I think you're really going to start to see Ryan Newsom's going to start to get more snaps. So obviously, Burt's already getting the majority of the snaps. So again, you're seeing every game more and more freshmen and redshirt freshmen are getting snaps. And it goes back to what I remember what Charlie and them said in the preseason. If you're even with an upperclassman, a freshman is even with an upperclassman, a freshman's playing. And I think as when the lights come on, and the freshmen get snaps, they may make mistakes, but the coaches see just that the athletic ability and the ability to make plays that some of these upperclassmen just are not making or can't make. So it's just, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, again, we're going to see a lot of mistakes, Matt, with the freshmen, but I bet by the end of the year, we're going to look up and probably of the 22 players playing, you're only going to have about one or two, three of the seniors playing. You're going to have about 18, 19 freshmen or redshirt players playing. And you know, I like the experience because, you know, I guess there could be a scenario where Strong would, I guess if we didn't win another game, you know, he would be gone. But, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I think we're going to somehow scrape out 5-6 wins. You know, I may be wrong because the schedule does get better after OU, and there are some winnable games there. I mean, Strong is going to be back next year. If he can pull in anywhere close to the type of class in 2006 that he got in 2015, the ship could be starting to turn a little bit. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on the major youth movement, which is not surprising?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, this is just such a weird year because we're 1-3. We've had two heartbreaking losses. But this team is fun as hell to watch, and it's fun as hell to watch
yeah.
these young guys come in because they don't play like freshmen, whereas, you know, a lot of times a freshman will be tentative. These guys are making mistakes. They're making mistakes out of being too aggressive, which,
uh-huh.
you know, I'll take that any day of the week, man, over somebody that's just scared to make a mistake. You know, I think the secondary is really impressive. You know, when you think about, you know, guys that have been fans of this program for a long time, you know, we've had, you know, we could sit here for the rest of the show and rattle off all the names in the secondary, you know, that have come through here. And really, other than Earl Thomas, a lot of those guys were brutal their freshman year. I remember Cedric Griffin, I hated him his freshman year. He was terrible. And his effort was poor. I'll never forget the Texas OU game where he, you know, just basically gave a one-handed shove to somebody to try to push him out of bounds and obviously didn't make the play. And I thought, this guy is a waste of a scholarship. Well, he turns out to grow up and become, you know, a huge player and make a career out of it in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, when I think about those guys and how rough they were as freshmen, and then I look at guys like Holton Hill, you know, getting a pick six, and, you know, the other guys in the secondary that are coming in and making something happen. Sure, they're giving up plays, they're getting beat, but I don't see a lot of head hanging, and I don't see a lot of, you know, lack of effort when things start going bad. They just seem to keep balling. And to me, that's really exciting. I think on the linebacker positions, you know, Malik obviously has made plays. I watched a lot of the linebackers at Oklahoma State, and I think it really felt like to me, like, you know, after getting gashed on the run at Cal, they were really focused on trying to take away the run, and they ended up kind of getting out of position because Oklahoma State ran a lot of those play action or misdirection, and the linebackers, again, being too aggressive, were reading the run and forgetting their other responsibilities and then, you know, giving up plays or being out of position, and they were hitting guys over the middle. But to me, that's stuff that, you know, that's just stuff that with experience and with confidence and growing confidence and being, you know, just getting that experience on the field, they'll be able to eliminate that. Athletically, I think they're there, and mentally they're definitely there. And obviously Malik has shown, you know, when he gets a chance to make a play, he's going to make a play and make a hit on somebody. So to me, it's exciting. You know, I said it a couple weeks ago, the development's not going to be in a straight line, although I have to say with some of the secondary guys, so far it kind of has. It seems like every week they're getting better,
yeah.
And that's exciting. And I think that's the thing where, you know, I know people are frustrated. They're not used to being 1-3, but, I mean, it's absurd to see some of the stuff some people are saying about Strong. When I look out on the field, I don't see a program that's falling apart. I just see a program that's, they made the call, right? You know, the only criticism I would have is, you know, waiting until game two to make some of those changes. Maybe should have been made in the off season. But credit to the staff. They realized they failed that first test at Notre Dame, and it was time to make drastic changes. And we've seen that immediately in all aspects, not just offensive coordinator, but guys that are coming on the field on defense. So,
well,
it's, you don't know what,
No, I was going to say, I agree that could be a frustrating point, but I really think what happened was, I think the you know, Strong's 20-plus years of experience, all the other coaches' experiences, even though the freshman probably looked just incredible in practice, you know, that little birdie in their ear was probably saying, hey, you know, it's practice. My 20 years experience is telling me we're going on the road to Notre Dame, bright lights. They're right out of high school. Yes, they're going to be great next year, the year after. There's just no way they're ready to go play at Notre Dame, regardless of what they look like in practice. You know, some of the guys don't look as good at them, but they're upperclassmen. They played in a big game. You know, let's go up there, see how we look, and I'll go from there. And I really think that's the way. And then he got up there, went back, got on the plane on the way home and said, well, the hell with this. I mean, I've got to play my freshman now. I mean, I think he wanted to. I really think he wanted to do that the first game, but his years of experience told him this is unheard of. Freshman ain't ready to play at this level. Well, he may have a special group here that is ready.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, like I said, they're making plays. They are getting beat. But, you know, in this conference, they're going to get beat when they're seniors, too, from time to time. We're not going to – I mean, I think the days in this conference of having a defense that just locks everybody down is just over. Until, you know, until either the offenses get held back somehow by the rules or, you know, if they start letting them play football again. But I think, you know, the fact that you look at guys in that secondary, my God, you know, they barely know where any of the buildings on campus are, and they're making huge plays. Against, you know, Cal and Oklahoma State, which are, you know, we're not talking about Stephen F. Austin here. These are teams that are very capable on offense. So I'm excited. I mean, I'm terrified of the TCU game because it's another big step up in competition. It's much more like playing Notre Dame than Cal or Oklahoma State. But it's fun to just see what to me, where I'm having more fun is just literally watching individual guys and seeing, you know, seeing those areas of development and know that, like you said, if Strong can build off of this and get another class in here that can contribute right away, you know, it ain't going to be long before really he gets things rolling, that momentum starts going.
Well, I've already kind of gave my take on the officials, and so I wanted to get yours. I have not been on Shaggy this week, but I'm sure it's been pretty crazy over there as all the Longhorn boards this week in regard to officiating. But I guess what is your take on the officiating, and we'll just move on from that because, I mean, we could beat that horse to death for sure.
Well, two things. Just the first take during the game and then what I've read online. So I'm not saying this is the first time this has ever happened, but on very rare occasions, I will reach my phone, grab my phone, and try to remember who I know that's watching the game on TV and that isn't in the stadium to try to get a read on if the announcers think the officials are as bad as I do. And I did that really in about the second quarter. I couldn't believe a couple of the calls just because it just seemed like, you know, I'm okay with – well, I'm not okay with it, but there are crews that will throw a whole bunch of flags, and you'll see a whole bunch of flags on both sides. And I know this crew actually did that in Morgantown last year. To me, it's awful. You know, it's just awful football when, you know, everything is being called. You know, like they always say, you can call holding on every play, and this crew usually does. the weird thing was just the one-sidedness, and then just the – you know, the stuff that drives me crazy is the, and this crew did it as well, this isn't, you know, necessarily bias or anything, but how many conferences did we have to have after a flag was thrown to talk about what the flag was? I mean, at one point, that's what I was telling guys I was sitting with, is the guy that threw the flag obviously saw the foul. You know, what do they have to sit around and talk about for 5 minutes before they make a decision on what the call is? And then, you know, when you got late in the game, I didn't realize until I saw the video later what actually happened with Charlie Strong, but I can just say that my frustration level was so high that even given the game situation, I was glad that Strong went and got that 15-yard penalty because screw it. At that point, it felt like no matter what happens, we're going to get hosed on this, so you might as well go down and send a message to your team, the fans, and everybody else that says we're not just going to stand and let this happen. After the game was over, you know, everybody's been talking about the Barking Carnival article, and I know that some of our rivals and some of the other knuckleheads from schools that left the Big 12 got a lot of joy out of that, thinking that, you know, that's just some harebrained knee-jerk reaction. But the guy that wrote that article is about the most reasonable Texas fan on the internet, and, you know, usually is a pretty much a go-to source for well-thought-out opinions on Texas football. This is not a guy that writes stuff for clicks or has hot
right.
sports takes all the time that are just idiotic. I was stunned. I think I had my mouth wide open as I was reading that article, because for someone like that to make those statements was really something. And I think that got lost, you know, on the internet as people were laughing about it or whatever. Is this is not
mm-hmm.
some Johnny-come-lately emotional guy who's probably still drunk from the game and, you know, scribbled out some rants about the officiating. And when Scipio is saying something like that, I think you should listen. And you know, people didn't really interpret what he wrote. You know, they thought he was accusing the refs of all sorts of things, and that's clearly not the point of his article. The point was the calls were so bizarre that it leads you to wonder what the hell is going on, because in all the years of watching football, you know, this just doesn't happen on, you know, for no reason. So he threw out some possibilities and people ran with that. And who knows what the actual reason is. You know, I don't think it was really handled well post-game either, as far as, you know, how they came out and kind of defended the refs. I actually think that the Big 12 would have been better off saying nothing. I think the comments, the way they were stated, were just so poorly verbalized that it led to the story continuing on for two or three more days, when what the Big 12 needed to do is make that story go away as soon as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there was also another one. I think it was on Barking Carl Lazelle, another one of their another writer wrote something on it. So, yeah, they had actually two very, very good pieces on it. But, I agree that's what got lost. Anybody that, you know, has pretty reasonable takes at any point in time, even where we're really, really good or we're really, really bad, you know, he stays pretty even keel to his points in his writing. So, all I can say is hopefully they'll even out. You know, maybe behind the scenes, the Big 12 did not want to, you know, embarrass itself publicly, but maybe behind the scenes there's something going on and they're going to look into it. And, you know, I mean, it's not going to change the outcome of the game. Some rumors started on a couple boards today, you know, somebody that's a friend of this official, of that friend, of the, you know, we're buying a house next to this person and we know his sister because she had a Coca-Cola and bought French fries, you know, that type of crap. That one of them was actually supposedly suspended today, but you know how the internet boards go. Well, I've got a sister who ate lunch at dinner with this girl, went to school with her friend, who's friends with Joe, who Facebooked John, who saw, you know how that crap goes, Matt. So I wouldn't put any credence in all that stupidity. So,
well, Mike, one thing, you know, as a fan of Major League Baseball, one of my biggest pet peeves of umpiring, and it happened to my Giants earlier this year on a, you know, umpires all over the place behind the plate. Pitcher is frustrated, you know, snaps the ball back from the catcher in the glove, probably muttering some F-words under his breath. And the umpire runs out, you know, from behind the plate and takes his mask off and starts barking back at the pitcher. Well, of course, the pitcher's already hot. He barks back. Next thing you know, pitcher's ejected. And I think, you know, that line judge with Charlie Strong, I mean, I'm not suggesting, you know, I have no idea why that happened. It's probably heat of the moment. But a ref's got to know better, man. I mean, if you've got to know the situation, you have to know as a referee whether you think the defensive holding call is right or not. You have to know that your coach on that sideline is going to go nuclear when you call a defensive holding on a run play with 3 minutes to go in the game or whatever. And to continue kind of talking back, I mean, the ref has to walk away from that situation. And that, to me, is the number one thing that I think I would say, you know, if I was a Big 12 official, if anybody's going to get, you know, taken to the principal's office, would be that. I mean, Charlie Strong said his piece, walk away. If he keeps walking after you and called you an MF-er and everything else, then sure, you got every right to throw a flag. But when you escalate it by turning back and getting right up against him, There's nothing good that's going to happen from that, and it looks bad for everybody, the conference, the coach, the referee, and everyone. And I would say if they want to make one of these stupid points of emphasis, the point of emphasis should be tell the referees to just walk away.
All righty. Well, let's shift gears one more time. Let's do our top four this week. And as we always say, it's kind of fluid. I'll do mine quickly so we can get a few other picks in. But my four playoff teams as of this week, I'm going with still Ohio State. No particular order. It doesn't really matter. Ohio State, Michigan State almost slipped out of mine this week because that Oregon win is definitely not looking as good as it did earlier after Oregon's. But they're still in it. I've got Michigan in. And then I'm going to go with Notre Dame. Just because of their injuries, they're continuing to just destroy people. So they're a good football team. So Notre Dame is in my Final Four this week, and I've still got LSU until somebody beats them. So that's my Final Four right now: Ohio State, Michigan State, Notre Dame, LSU. Matt, go.
Ohio State for sure. I'm going to say Notre Dame number two because I saw something online that says ESPN NFL draft, so-called expert, stated that Notre Dame has 10 of the NFL 150 top prospects for next year's draft on the roster. Still
that's
playing.
Pretty strong. Woo. Yeah,
that may explain why they're still playing well despite all of the massive injuries. So I'm going to put Notre Dame in. Man, this is really tough right now because I just think it's a little bit like the Big 12. There's just a big glob of teams. I'm concerned about LSU just because that Syracuse team was junk. They should have gone in there and destroyed them. Maybe they took it a little bit lightly, but I'm a little concerned about them, but I'll keep them in for now. But I've got a down arrow next to them.
Uh-huh.
And then I know I'm going to regret this at some point, but I'm going completely off the reservation, and I'm going to say UCLA is my number four.
Okay, that won't last long, but yeah, that's a...
I got to pick somebody, man.
Yeah, I know. There's about six teams clustered all in there, but in the next couple of weeks, it's going to start to shake out. Well, let's get into a few picks. Let's start with one I think is going to be a great game this week, West Virginia, Oklahoma. West Virginia, oddly, has the number one scoring defense in the country right now. Obviously, that's probably skewed a little bit because of their schedule, but they are improved. And I remember just a few years ago, they probably had the worst defense. Well, I don't think that defense is going to look nearly as good in Norman. So I'm going with Oklahoma just because Stoops just doesn't lose many games at home. Oklahoma's minus seven. I think it'll stay within that. I'm going to go 31-27. Oklahoma.
So this is one of those games where when the point spread came out, then it made me nervous. I thought OU wins by two touchdowns in this game, but then I saw that I think it opened at 8.5 and moved to 7.
Yep.
So I'm very concerned, but I'm still going to stick with Oklahoma by two touchdowns. I'm going to say 38-24.
Next one, SEC matchup, Mississippi State at the Aggies. Going back and forth if I was going to even give that idiot board of regent member any play on his stupid comments today. Everybody knows what they were, so I'm not even going to acknowledge it because he pissed me off. I was going to pick A&M to win, but since he said that today, I had changed my mind. I think A&M's getting a little on their high horse. Mississippi State is actually a little better than they thought. I think they're going to surprise A&M this week. I think it's going to be high scoring. I'm going 38-34, Mississippi State with the upset on the road.
Well, I did not hear what the Board of Regents said. So.
Hold on. Let me let you know. The Aggie Board of Regents. I don't even remember his name, Derrick or whatever. I don't know. He basically was asked, of course, again about playing Texas, and he said, "Well." He said, I would like to get Texas back on our schedule because, you know, since we play so many tough games in the SEC, we need a few more cupcakes on our schedule. So he said it'll fit. He goes, that'll fit right in with our other out-of-conference games that we play now. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's taking the Brett Bielema approach to
yes.
speaking to the media. Okay, well, I know I picked A&M to win big last week, and they barely survived, but I still don't believe in Mississippi State, and I think that A&M wins this one big. I know Dak Prescott is good. If he can go into Kyle Field and one-man band it to a victory, I will put him in my top five Heisman finalists for now, but I don't think that happens. I'm going to say A&M 36, Mississippi State 17.
Kansas State, Oklahoma State, minus 8, Oklahoma State. Basically coming off a lucky win on their part. I think we exposed some things. I just don't think Kansas State has the talent to win the game, but I think they'll play within 8. I think Oklahoma State will have a little letdown. I'm going to go 30-27 Oklahoma State.
That's a good pick. I'm kind of with you. I think if I'm Oklahoma State, I'm a little worried about a few things after watching that game. You know, the Wizard was watching that game film. But I just, yeah, with K-State missing their starting quarterback for the year, I think this will be a 5-point game. I'll say 32-27, Oklahoma State.
Ole Miss at Florida. Florida is actually a surprisingly 4-0. Got a lucky win at Georgia. Ole Miss is a 7-point favorite on the road. I think Florida will be playing with a lot of emotion, but unfortunately I believe they're going to have a huge letdown after coming back on Tennessee. I think Ole Miss rolls. Florida's not there yet. They've been playing way above their heads. I'm going Mississippi State 42, Florida 17.
Mississippi.
Yeah.
Ole Miss 31-10.
Texas Tech at Baylor. Baylor at home, minus 17. Tech's coming off a brutal loss. They had TCU fourth down, had batted the ball up. Game was over. I mean, basically TCU was done. I mean, it took a miracle. That was a miracle play. Baylor does come out fast at home. Baylor may score every possession. I think Tech's going to score a lot, too. I'm going to go in the 50s for both teams. I'm going 55-51 Tech. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. I know a lot of people think Baylor's going to roll, but I think Tech's going to be able to move the ball.
Yeah, you know, we were saying earlier that everything evens out. Well, that tip ball catch happened in the Michael Crabtree end zone, so things do even out
with
time. Sometimes it takes 6 years or 7 years or whatever. Man, this is really tough. I think you're right. Absolutely. Tech's going to be able to move the ball on Baylor. This is just so tough for Tech having to come back and play Baylor the next week after TCU. And I'm really rooting for Texas Tech, but I think that they're going to run out of gas in the second half. I think they'll be tied at halftime, and then Baylor will pull away. So I'm going to say 51-31 Baylor.
Arkansas at Tennessee. Tennessee, 6.5-point favorite. Arkansas choked. I mean, there ain't no other way. We were watching that game. They just basically handed it to A&M. All they needed was a first down or two. Ball game over. I think the losing continues and the fire breath signs are going to be coming out in Fayetteville. I think they're going to have a big letdown. I think Tennessee finally gets I hate to call it a signature win, but they are going to get a big win. I'm going Tennessee 31, Arkansas 14.
Memo to Brett Bielema, when you have 3rd and 4 and a game on the line and you're Arkansas, run the damn football. Don't throw 2 passes. Drives me crazy. I don't understand what Arkansas was doing at the end of that game. Tennessee, I'm not real sold on. They're also coming off that tough loss, but I think the home field comes to play here. Another loss for Arkansas. I'm sure we all feel real bad about it. I'm going to say Tennessee 34, Arkansas 27.
And real quick, Notre Dame-Clemson, it started at Clemson was -2. It's now a pick 'em. I'm definitely going to stick with Notre Dame. I'm going 34-30 Notre Dame.
Yeah, until further notice, I'm staying on the Notre Dame bandwagon, and I will never pick Dabo Swinney to win a big Saturday night primetime game at home after Florida State demolished them a few years ago when
yep.
I was all over Clemson and lost some money. So take that, Dabo. I'm going to take Notre Dame 28-20.
And the final pick of the night, our own Texas Longhorns plus 15. It actually has dropped a little bit. At TCU, 11 o'clock kickoff. TCU coming from a last play win. Us coming from basically a last play loss. I think we're getting better. TCU's defense is beat up, so I think that is we'll keep it in the game. But I think at the end of the day, TCU's offense in the fourth quarter will make just one or two more plays that we're going to be capable of making at this point. So I am not going to pick us to win this week, but I think we'll be pretty competitive. At least I'm hoping I am. But I think at the end of the day, TCU is going to win. I'm going to say, oh, man, this has been back and forth. I'm going to go 41-31 TCU.
Man, we're almost right on this one. I think if Texas is going to win, they got to jump on them early. We need a sleepy Fort Worth crowd. Hopefully everybody in Fort Worth goes out to 7th Street or Stockyards or whatever on Friday night and stays out till 2, so they're nice and sleepy Saturday morning.
Yep.
You got to jump on them early. Cannot turn the ball over. I'm not going to say force a lot of turnovers because I just don't think that's going to happen with this offense. And I think Texas will give a game effort. I think, again, they're going to show some things that make us kind of say, wow, make some plays. But, man, Dotson at receiver keeps me up at night this week. Even
yes.
as good as our freshmen have played. If you look back, the Cal number one receiver destroyed us. Oklahoma State's number one receiver destroyed us. That probably is happening again. I'm going to say you had 41-31. I think I had 41-30. So I think we're right on the same page. For once, we have almost the exact same pick.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, maybe we'll get some turnovers. You never know what may happen. But, yeah, unfortunately, I feel like we're staring one and four in right down the barrel, unfortunately. So then we'll come back next week, and we'll get ready for OU. I want to see how OU looks against West Virginia. I want to see how we look against TCU. Maybe I'm picking Texas to upset OU next week. We'll see what happens. Real quick before we go, Cowboys are beat up. Boy, that was a brutal loss for the Cowboys last week after getting to a big start, out to a quick start. My Texans figured out how to win, even though we still look awful. The best thing about the Texans is they let fat-ass Bullock go today, thank God. One left Aggie on the roster is always a good thing to me. So we don't have to worry about him missing any more kicks. But the NFL season, moving right along, I think the best three or four teams in any particular order for me so far is obviously the Patriots look like they're at a different level. The Packers look like they're at a different level. And then I would have to even throw in the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're for real. So I think that's the top three teams right now in the NFL. And then the Cowboys, I think, are right there once they're healthy. So quick NFL thoughts, Matt.
Yeah, the Cowboys have to beat New Orleans this week. It just sucks that New Orleans is playing for their lives, and it's a Sunday
yeah.
night game. Thanks a lot, NBC. Brandon Whedon on the road at New Orleans. Let's just say I'm not real thrilled about looking forward to watching that game. But if they can just find a way, man, it's – yeah. The big fear is that, you know, things go south really badly, and then even when the guys come back healthy, you've got such a big hill to climb, you're not going to be able to get into the tournament in the postseason. So we'll see what happens. I'm a lot less excited than I was a couple weeks ago, but that's football.
Baseball, about four games of the regular season. My Astros lost just a heartbreaker last night, but we're still right there. The Rangers are battling. The Angels are losing 8-5, so maybe we're getting ready to, you know, we play later tonight, so we're going to see how this thing ends up. I think the Angels play the last three at the Rangers, and then we finish up with three on the road. So it's probably going to come down to the last actual day for all three of us. It wouldn't be surprising if there's a three-way tie. I don't know what's going to happen now. It looks like neither team wants to win the wild card or the division with this thing. So it's it's a crazy deal in baseball. Basketball season is starting up. NBA. It won't be long. Another week or two. College basketball will be having their kickoff practices. And I don't know if anybody saw our true freshman jumping ability last night on Twitter, but all I can say to that is, wow, Matt, wow.
Yeah, bring on basketball season. That was unbelievable. Definitely check that out on YouTube, Kerwin Roach, if you
Kerwin Roach,
see that last
man.
Night.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Spark puts together on the basketball court. I'm gonna definitely have to get to Austin to see a few more games this year. It should be exciting. Hopefully the Irwin Center will get back to full capacity instead of half capacity. It's gonna be exciting. So with that said, we'll see you next week. Everybody traveling up to Fort Worth, have a safe trip. Get out there, cheer the horns on. Have a safe trip back when you leave Fort Worth. Let's get us a win. But more importantly, hopefully the young kids will continue to grow and TCU was picked by a lot of people to be in the playoffs and play for the national championship. So, I mean, I'm not a moral victory guy, but if we go up there and keep it within 8-10 points and have a chance to win in the fourth, I have to look at that as a positive sign. But eventually this team's going to have to start getting some wins. And right now on the schedule, it's still rough. So hopefully we'll just continue to grow in the back half of the schedule and get here quick, and we can string together some wins, because losing sucks, regardless if we're growing up or not. And I know Strong wants to win. I mean, I can tell. I mean, the last couple of weeks, I mean, we talk about how brutal it was for us, but I'm sure he went into his office and punched the wall a few times. I'm sure he had to get away and regroup too, so, because he's competitive too. I mean, how can he not be? So, Matt, tell our listeners where they can find us.
Sure thing. You can find me on Twitter, at UT Tailgaters. No spaces, no hyphens, just UT Tailgaters. I'm personally hoping that this season ends with us taking down one of the big three. So here's our first chance on Saturday. Let's go get it. And if we pull off the upset, I will be naming the celebration point in Fort Worth, and we will celebrate deep into the night.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I know, Strong at this point, I think it would really help the team and help him, because if nothing else, we're not going to give up. These young kids are going to battle. So if y'all want to find me on Twitter, it's at MB Hornsand. Remember, the eyes of Texas are upon you. Hook 'em horns. And since George Strait announced a few shows next year in Las Vegas, how can I not take us out without the king of country music himself? We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
There wouldn't be no Alamo, no Cowboys in the Super Bowl, no lonesome dove, no yellow rose, if it wasn't for Texas. I wouldn't be a Willie fan, nobody swam the Rio Grande. I wouldn't be an American if it wasn't for Texas. Fort Worth would never cross my mind.